First, thank you very much for opening the space and actually to be able to share a space like this. And you'll see that as planned, we will complement each other. In fact, we didn't plan this. But I say this because I had written a note for myself to begin that actually is exactly weaving with what John was stating here. Greg Grandin, a historian, wrote a couple of books that are extremely relevant to everything that John was describing here. One of them is The Last Colonial Massacre. I think it's an extraordinary way of writing history. Just following people, a peasant woman, a union leader, etc., through Guatemala on the years of the worst massacres that actually are coming back. They're right back. That wasn't the last one. I still have to ask him why the hell he named it The Last Colonial Massacre. But in any case, the conclusion of that book is frightening and absolutely truthful. He states in the end that the empire and the interests of colonial powers has always been and will always be to maintain a very strong and permanent counterinsurgency. Because they're perfectly aware, as all colonial powers have been, that people have this strange tradition of not allowing themselves to be starved to death, enslaved and subdued, and so they do stuff to resist. So what Greg concludes in his book is that history demonstrates how they have this accumulated experience in counterinsurgency that combines all kinds of strategies, and that, in fact, if you see it from the other side, the history of all colonized people is a permanent revolutionary history. And so those things are tied together, and that's where we are. And what John was explaining is how these things are being adapted and transformed for our current days and times, and for their interests, and for the type of resistance that is developing. And here I was thinking constantly, and this is back to one of the statements made by Chomsky years ago on manufacturing consent. Says you have to, empire has to displace the struggles of the people from the area of ideas, direct action, consciousness, and political struggle to the field of force, so that they can achieve the results. I mean, it's inevitable that you have to push somebody that opposes you and is right to somebody that shows strength and force so that you can use force and crush them. But they don't. Winning is not ending the battle. Winning is having a battle, a permanent, a constant battle that goes on all the time. So, for example, in Latin America, they're not going to make the mistake they made in Peru. They're not going to put a Fujimori in power that then defeats Shining Path so that they don't have an enemy, and 4 months later he falls and is in jail and is being judged now and jailed for 25 years. Because the most useful instrument they could have had in Peru is Shining Path. Did they form Shining Path? I'm not saying that at all. But what can they do without Shining Path in Peru? They'll have to make another one. So they're not going to finish with FARC in Colombia, although they yell all over the place saying FARC is defeated, we're finishing with them, but the next day they'll come up. And if FARC doesn't put a bomb, they will put it. That's what is called false positive in Colombia. A positive is when you go and you shoot an enemy, right? Or destroy a helicopter or one of those things that was mentioned there. A false positive is when it wasn't an enemy, but you fabricated one. Like going to the streets of Bogota or Soacha or Cali, the main cities, picking up a 16-year-old leaving school, murdering that kid with an M16, dressing him in camouflage and presenting him as a positive. More than 1,500 documented cases in Colombia throughout the country that the government had to acknowledge and has resolved, don't worry. 25 army commanders, including the commander-in-chief of the Colombian army, had to leave service with, of course, honors. So So they're out enjoying their pensions because they served la patria, which is much more than the country. It's, I mean, something you put your hand in your heart for. More than 1,500. But it has nothing to do with you. Nothing. Except that your prime minister has presented legislation in parliament to get a free trade agreement ratified with this assassin and this regime. But this last statement I make would make it seem as though there's a guy that is maybe a criminal over there that's committing false positives and other dirty things, and we poor Canadians, including Harper Innocence and the liberals that are going to support him, they have shown us another story. They tell us human rights are improving, that we need, if we get legal economic development, that people will get out of narco-trafficking. So it's for their good. I mean, the people are getting into drug trade because there are no other options. And then this government is defeating FARC. Therefore, if we support this government, there'll be peace, prosperity, and security in the country. That's the way it's presented. Well, that's an absolute lie, and they know exactly what they're doing, as they know with all these counterinsurgency strategies. In summary, what's going on in Colombia is an application. It's the Colombia model, as we call it ourselves there. It's one of the, I mean, Afghanistan is one. By the way, John probably knows a lot of this stuff, how the Colombian anti-narcotic police is working closely with Afghanistan to help them fight the drug war. But it gets even more interesting. The previous U.S. ambassador in Colombia is the current U.S. ambassador in Afghanistan. And you know what the Colombia model is? Drug lords, death squads, controlling sections of the country until they control the entire country, and they run the elections by what we call parapolitica, which is these assassins, through terror, make people elect those who will get into Congress and then approve policy, such as the free trade agreement with Canada. So Congress in Colombia, 85% of the Colombian Congress is linked to death squads and was elected by them. 80 of the Colombian members of parliament are currently either in jail or being investigated because they came to Congress through death squads. That's how deeply. But all of them, all of the 80, belong to the president's political coalition directly. His cousin, Mario Uribe, with whom he developed all his political career, is now in jail, because he was elected through the assassination of leaders throughout his area. Terror used to get elected. But what for? To pass the policy and the legislation required for a free trade agreement, which in essence consists of a transfer of resources, territories, labor, and savings to transnational corporate interests. So let me try and organize this somehow to say this. Mr. Harper may be the prime minister of this country, and Obama is maybe the president of the U.S. But the architecture of power in this planet is not them anymore. Above them, there's transnational corporate interests. And the largest industry, you can say financial sector, and the largest industry in this planet is that apparatus that John was talking about. I mean, if Obama does not maintain the military-industrial complex moving, his economy will go deeper into the hole. He has to launch military at every bloody corner of this planet. But that's Obama, and I said there's people above him with power. How do they call them here? I don't know very much about this, but Canadian Council of Chief Executives, Thomas the Quinn, those guys are behind there. Now, the government of Canada, if we assume, obeys the orientations of this Council of Chief Executives, and then there's the Bilderberg Club and the Trilateral Commission and all these organizations for which we are accused to be paranoid and following conspiracy theories, right? and we're crazy and we see phantoms all over the place. In fact, the Greg Grandin goes and writes another book. I'm not promoting his books, by the way. I'm just reminded as he spoke, I was remembering of the... I mean, he writes this other book, The Empire's Workshop. And in the Empire, amongst many other books, in Empire's Workshop, he says that the entire Bush administration and the whole project for a new American century had been constructed during the Reagan and Bush senior eras throughout Latin America, from Pinochet to the north. So these people, you can follow them, and you know where they are now, and these people had developed all these initiatives. And then Antonia Juhasz and many others. So you have an architecture that starts there, and then you have the G7s, G20s, all the governments, but there are three combined strategies to access resources and territories. And those are terror, and terror is a lot more than war. It uses war for its purposes, but it achieves extraordinary results. And then you have propaganda, which is a lot more than advertising, and it's used in every country, from curricula at school to the newscasts to everything. It's just when you don't think somebody is thinking for you, and when we all think the same, we've become partners and accomplices of the same way of thinking. And then policies. And the policies have to enshrine the interests of and the corporate interests throughout. So let me take you to the 21st of November of 2008. And that's this that I have here. A massive mobilization in Colombia of indigenous and other peoples reaches Bogota, and it has a 5-point agenda. But in essence, it's 1-point agenda. It says, we do not want the free trade agreement or the free trade model, because it's based on two things that we don't want anymore. The first one is the exploitation of work. The second one is the destruction of Mother Earth. And it's inevitable that it will lead to the death of this planet. We have an economic crisis, an ecologic crisis, and a crisis of reproduction. Life will not continue if this system keeps going this way. Just don't lie to your kids telling them that they have a future, because they don't. It's gone, it's finished. This will not go on. It can't survive. And even the Pentagon says now that they have to invent some kind of machine to blast something out there so that the greenhouse gases can leave. So you have nothing to worry about. They'll solve it through counterinsurgency strategy. Insurgency of Mother Earth and CO2. There you go. So we're in great hands. So on the 21st of November, this mobilization arrives in Bogota, the main city, after 61 days and walking more than 1,000 kilometers. The story is here on a DVD that I have to sell for $20 to get money to the people there. When they arrive there on the 21st of November, as they're speaking about not wanting the free trade agreement peacefully, Prime Minister Harper and Uribe are meeting in Lima, Peru, and they're signing the free trade agreement that is about to be ratified. And President Uribe tells Prime Minister Harper, when I started in office in Colombia, 13% only of Colombian territory was open for exploration and exploitation for mining and hydrocarbon industry. But before I finish in 2010, 50% of the country will be open for that. Now, suppose I could have the power as a Colombian to come here and say that my transnational corporations are coming here and that 50% of your country will be open to mostly open pit mining, so I can displace you, rape you, destroy you, and leave you with a land that's good for nothing in the future. And guess why there's a war in Colombia? And 4 million internally displaced people, and the largest army in the South American continent, with 400,000 people, when Brazil has 300,000 people in arms for 120 million people, we have 400,000 people for 42 million. Soldiers are not trained to play chess. There's going to be a war like that one throughout South America. The entire South American continent is filled with U.S. military bases. The death squads are armed and trained by the U.S. the Colombian government is a death squad government that uses drug trade for this whole purpose, combining terror propaganda and policy. And guess what? In 21 days, you'll be accomplices of a genocidal regime for profit if this free trade agreement passes. And most Canadians don't know about it, don't want to know about it. And in fact, here, you do not need terror in an armed fashion, because you can just sign SPP agreements and deliver your water for free without anybody standing up to fight against it. So my final statement here would be simply to go back to what General Pace said, and this weaves what John and I have said. General Pace was the combined commander-in-chief. He was the guy that invaded Iraq, to make it simple, for oil. And when he was the commander of Southcom in Congress, he gave a report in the spring about 5 years ago. And they asked him, what are the national security interests of the U.S. in Latin America? And he raised a hand like this, and he says, water, biodiversity, oxygen, mining, and energy. Thank you very much.